is Monitor 69 with music by Harlow Wilcox and the Okies. Groovy Grubworm. With Monitor 69, where we're devoting a considerable part of our attention this weekend to the high cost of living, its causes, consequences, and what's being done to try to stop it. Just ahead, a report on the effect of inflation in Cleveland, Ohio, after we hear Glenn Campbell's latest, For Once in My Life.
Thank you.
Throughout this weekend, Monitor has been exploring the subject of inflation and high living costs. No one seems to be escaping the effects of inflation, but everyone seems to be waiting for someone else to do something about it. One place where a group of people have begun to take positive action is Cleveland, Ohio. And here with a story of how they're doing it is NBC newsman Del Donahue.
Cooperative food buying clubs, quantity buying at wholesale prices, were effective in stretching scarce dollars during the Depression days of the 1930s. About 500 Cleveland families are trying the same thing now. Each family, many from the inner city, some from wealthy suburbs, pays a $2 membership fee and a 10% service charge. This covers the co-op office expenses and the cost of delivering the grocery orders to distribution points. Mrs. Shelby Holmes, a welfare mother with three children, joined the club several months ago. Like the others, she places her grocery order every Tuesday at a Westside Cleveland church, a distribution point, and picks her food up the following Tuesday. She pays 50 cents for a pound of hamburger, compared to about 70 cents at her closest supermarket. For the first time in years, Mrs. Holmes says, her family has some kind of meat every day, even an occasional pork chop and a roast on Sunday. Before joining the club, Mrs. Holmes said, we'd have mostly peanut butter the last week before the check came. And now that we're used to a better diet, I don't know how we'd get along without the club. Mrs. Holmes shops selectively, however. She finds that some canned goods, for example, cost a few pennies more through the club than at the supermarket because of the service charge. So she simply doesn't order those things on which she can't save money. But overall, Mrs. Holmes estimates the food club saves her about $35 a month. The manager of the co-op, Arthur Tolliver, is reluctant to talk about the success of the club, but he says it is working out. To one enthusiastic club member, working out means, in his words, eating steak for the same money that non-member friends are paying the supermarket for hamburger. Del Donahue, NBC News.
Cleveland's efforts in the area of cooperative buying seem to be helping the consumer there. But New York City has them too, and they don't seem to be making much of a dent in the cost of living for New Yorkers. NBC newsman Dean Mell has some observations on the city with the highest cost of living in the continental United States.
New Yorkers, like everyone else, suffer from rising costs. Perhaps even a little more than most, because the metropolitan area already ranks as the most expensive place to live anywhere in the United States outside of Honolulu. Inflation's bite is just that much bigger here. A group of outraged housewives on Long Island has been waging a month-long food strike in an attempt to drive down high meat costs. Their success, if any, has gone unnoticed at meat counters elsewhere in the New York area. Broadway theater prices, which top out at $12 per ticket, and movie houses that charge $3 to $5, keep a lot of people home at night. And home, for a lot of New Yorkers, is an apartment, instead of the house they want in the suburbs that can't be built because construction costs are so high and mortgage money is unavailable. The high cost of credit is causing many families to put off buying installment items like cars, TV sets, and appliances. The near disastrous effects of strikes by New York City garbage collectors and fuel oil delivery men were partly caused by inflation. Higher living costs lead public servants to demand higher wages. New Yorkers pay the price. Inconvenience during the strike, higher taxes after the settlement. The subway rider may soon have to shell out an extra nickel if the fare is raised to a quarter, as now seems likely. In fact, the only service in New York unaffected by inflation is the ferry ride from Manhattan to Staten Island. It's still a nickel, the same price established when the ferry was founded in the 19th century. Dane Mell, NBC News, reporting for Monitor.
Later today, some notes on the high cost of living in Ireland from a gentleman who has just written a book about the Emerald Isle. Now, Monitor Music by the Sunshine Company, the only thing that mattered.
Count up the years that make a lifetime. You don't have long to learn the rhythm of the rain. When the time dying comes around and you lie there looking at the ceiling waiting for the curtain to fall, you wonder what good were all the wars you made, why you raised your kids to be afraid of all the distances in life. The distances are small.
and the sounds of life grow thinner. No love is the only thing that matters after all.
In the end, your memory's like a movie. Your mind rejecting everything you've ever been. Not a very pretty story that you've run along to the gates of glory. No one there would dare to let you in. So what good were all the deals you made? Why'd you turn your kids away every time they came along to touch your hand? Such a busy man.
Now the flame begins to flicker as you breathe a little quicker. No love was the only thing that mattered after all. The only thing that matters after all.
A tribute to Senator Everett Dirksen in 70 seconds. You're on the Monitor Beacon.
Hi, this is Johnny Carson. All across this land, people of goodwill are looking for a meaningful way to extend the hand of friendship to people living in ghetto areas of America. I'm here to tell you how you can help. The Community Development Foundation is a nonprofit organization that's been helping people in many parts of the world pinpoint their problems and mobilize their resources and labor to work out solutions. The Community Development Foundation has now pledged its experience, staff, and skills to tackling the big job of community building that's needed in ghetto areas of the United States. Self-help is the idea, but it needs your help to get started. For further information on how you can become a partner in this vital program, write to Community Development Foundation, 345 East 46th Street, New York, New York, 10017. That address again is Community Development Foundation, 345 East 46th Street, New York, New York, 10017.
WNBC, Radio 660, New York. This afternoon, Senate Republican leader Everett McKinley Dirksen died at the age of 73 after having undergone surgery at Walter Reed Army Hospital last Tuesday. For a report on the life and career of Senator Dirksen, here is NBC News congressional correspondent Robert McCormick in Washington.
One of the last truly colorful members of the Senate was lost today when Senator Dirksen died. Dirksen began his congressional career in 1932 by getting himself elected to the House from sturdily Republican Southern Illinois. He won unequivocally in spite of the landslide that put Franklin Roosevelt into the White House. For his 16 years in the House, he seemed a typical Midwestern isolationist conservative to those of us who knew him in those days, not particularly distinguished for his flexibility, originality, or leadership qualities. Then he had trouble with his eyes. Doctors told him he'd go blind. He refused a last hope operation and retired in 1948. Putting his faith in the power of heaven, as he sometimes put it, he miraculously recovered from his eye ailment and in 1950, 19 years ago, was elected to the Senate. At that time, he had this statement, one of the briefest he would make in his Senate career.
I feel quite good. I feel very happy. I feel happy for the people. I feel happy for the country.
Dirksen had an impish way of looking at things and of expressing himself, not apparent in his early days in the Senate, but the American public knows his style well. He became more and more adept at a turning of phrase and modulating his voice to get the maximum effect from anything he said. At one point, he described Congress in these words.
You're operating here with two equal bodies, House and Senate, with an aggregate of 535 members. each one has his views. And he don't slide through quite that fast. And fortunately for the country, it doesn't. In a dictatorship, all somebody has to do is crack the whip, and there it is. But someone once likened our country to an old waterlogged scow. It don't move very fast, and it don't go very far at one time, but it never sinks.
Dirksen's early conservatism gradually gave way in certain areas to such an extent that nobody could be really sure how he'd vote on anything until the issue became crystal sharp. Time after time, he would announce a position on a developing crisis, then change that position perhaps several times in rapid succession. But traces of what have come to be considered conservatism remained with him, as his views on law and order.
It is the responsibility of the authorities at the local level, at the state level, and if that fails, at the national level, to see that there is no insurrection, there is no violent anarchy, and there is no breakdown of law and order. Rioting is rioting. Call it as you will. It is simply a kind of modest-sized anarchy because it flouts the law. And in organized society, in a country that is dedicated to peace and order, you can't permit it to exist.
Best known to the country, perhaps, was Dirksen's lighter side in which he specialized.
I haven't had a chance to holler out pumpkins and make jack-o'-lanterns. I wish there was a little more time and I didn't get up so late every night from work. I could have some real fun making jack-o'-lanterns and setting them up. And they would frighten children a little, but not very much.
Senator Dirksen's frequent speeches on behalf of the marigold, which he championed as the national flower for the United States, have become classics in American oratory. Senator Dirksen reached a high point of his legislative career in Democratic administrations, strangely enough, as was evidenced by the fact that he, almost single-handed, was responsible for switching enough votes to get through the important civil rights laws of 1964 and 1965. He cooperated closely with Senate Democratic leader Mansfield in the Senate, and here, Mansfield and House Republican leader Ford expressed their grief at Dirksen's death.
I am distressed and saddened at the news of Edward Dirksen's passing. To me, it is in a sense a personal tragedy. He was a real professional in the best meaning of that word. He was a good leader. He was a man with whom I could work with on absolutely honest terms at all times, and he was one who always laid his cards on the table. Maureen, my wife and I feel very deeply about the passing of this great man, and we are shocked that it happened so suddenly.
And now, House Republican Leader Ford.
Well, Senator Dirksen, it must be said, he was truly larger than life. He was the kind of a man who not only filled the canvas, but spilled over from it. He was so colorful that whether you agreed with him or not, you loved to hear him talk. He was truly a great man in American politics. He had a uniqueness that was peculiarly Dirksen. There was nobody like him before. There will be nobody like him again. I am extremely proud to have been the junior half of the Evan Jerry Show.
In his more somber, more serious moments, Senator Dirksen had almost a mystic quality when he sat down and soberly talked about such things as, for example, his future and what might happen to him in later years.
What was it that Bryan once said? Live as if you were to die tomorrow. Plan as if you were to live forever. And so when you have bigger and there is service to be rendered. And if the Lord has work for me to do, I want to be around to do it. And so, without being very specific about the future, I go on as I do and work to the full. There are long hours in this business. It's hard work. I like it. If I didn't, I wouldn't be in it. And I like to think of service beyond my present term. But who shall say what the fates have in store?
And so goes a man we all will deeply miss. Perhaps Senator Mansfield summed it up best when we asked him how he felt about Senator Dirksen's lung operation. Senator Mansfield said, "Never in my life have I been so depressed." And I can assure you that those of us who worked with Senator Dirksen feel precisely that way. Robert McCormick, NBC News in Washington.
A tribute to the late Senate Republican leader, Everett McKinley Dirksen, born January 4th, 1896, died September 7th, 1969. And now this message from the Peace Corps Volunteer Campaign. Maybe you don't want to join the Peace Corps because when you come back after 2 years, all your friends will be married, all your clothes will be out of style, and all the good jobs will be taken. While there are worse things, like closing your eyes to the unbelievable poverty in the world, like refusing to think about people who don't get enough to eat, or the millions who die from diseases that have been curable for years. If these things concern you, write the Peace Corps, Washington, D.C., 20525 for information. And the MGs. And now a reminder for you to send for your free NBC listening guide showing the call letters, the location, and the dial frequency of all the stations in our NBC radio network. Now, for example, it tells you that up in Binghamton, New York, you get Monitor at 680 on your dial, station WINR. We'll step aside right here for a word from the NBC affiliate nearest you, and then we'll be right back. I'm Durward Kirby.
How did one single girl beat the high cost of being a single girl? That story just around the corner on Monitor 69.
This is Durward Kirby for Monitor 69, where we're presenting a week-long series of reports on the effects of inflation and the high cost of living here and abroad. Shortly, we will hear from the author of a new book on the subject of single girls and their problems, one of which, of course, is the difficulty of making ends meet on an office girl's salary. Right now, music by the Friends of Distinction. Let yourself go.
Hey, you.
considerable attention this weekend to the high cost of living and how to beat it. And it just so happens that there's a new book that deals, among other things, with high prices as they affect the single girl. The book is called, aptly enough, The Single Girl's Book, and it's the work of a lady named Stanley Miller Coy. She was interviewed for Monitor by Jim Harriet.
What can a girl do when she can't pay her bills, besides leave town?
Well, there are several things you should do. First thing is don't panic and don't go to one of these places that advertise consolidate your loans that you see signs on in the streets. She could try going to a reputable place and getting a loan. Or the most simple thing to do is go to the credit manager of the store or the owner of the shop where she bought the things and explain to them her problem, and they'll probably be very reasonable about letting her work out payments over a period of time. They'd much rather do that, obviously, than press a lawsuit or go into a lot of bother for themselves. And then also there are consumer credit counseling services in every city that she could go to. And lastly, if a girl gets in any trouble with contracts or time payments, she can go to the Bar Association because they have a legal referral service, and you can get yourself a lawyer for $5 for a half hour of talk, and they can straighten you out, no doubt.
Two areas that are always problems are clothes, keeping them clean, and liquor for entertainment. How about those problems?
One of the best solutions for a girl in her cleaning problem are the dry cleaning machines that work just like the washing machines. You put in 50 cents or a dollar, and then you toss in your clothes. And these work very well, except for most expensive dresses you have that you probably want to have done at a regular cleaner's. But these are wonderful and a great bargain. And for entertaining, I don't think that most girls really want to serve beer, because their dates don't buy them beer usually when they go out, or not all the time. So what they should do is buy the house brands of liquor at their liquor store, even though we're told that, you know, certain name brands are better, and they probably are, but house brands are still very acceptable. And another little trick is that a girl can go in with a couple of friends and buy a case of liquor at a time, which is much cheaper. And then they divide it up if she can't use it all at once.
Sounds like a good party in the making.
Yes.
Do you have fond memories of your single days?
I had a wonderful time as a single girl, but one of the reasons I wrote the book was that when I was just out of college, I went off with no idea of where to get a job or how to get a job or how to get an apartment, and I was completely lost. And I did get into debt, and I did get an apartment that was much too expensive for me. So I hope that some of my ideas could make the way a little bit easier and therefore more fun for single girls.
We've been talking with Stanley Miller Coy, author of The Single Girl's Book.
A few well-chosen words on the high cost of turning yourself from a single girl into a married girl. Next, a musical essay on the character-building effect of love on the male of the species. Engelbert Humperdinck with I'm a Better Man.
If I could catch a star before it touched the ground, I'd place it in a box, tie ribbons all around, and then I'd offer it to you. A token of my love and deep devotion. The world's a better place with you to turn to. I'm a better man. For having loved you, and now at last I face the future unafraid. With you here by my side, how fast the shadows fade, and there is hope inside my heart.
And here's the correct time for those of you who might be listening to this program in the dark. It's 16 and a half minutes before the hour, and you're on the Monitor Beacon.